Blog Talk Radio.
Time for something.
Hi, I'm Ryan Tannehill, quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, and I represent the Finsider with the PH.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome everyone to Finsider Radio. My name is Keith. I'll be your host until 9:30 p.m. Eastern. We have a very special program for you. At 8:15, we'll visit with AFC East Bros writer Kyle Smith. The twist there is that Kyle is very much a Jets fan, which might be a first for this program. I don't know that I've ever featured guests from vermin franchises like the Jets and Patriots before, but we're going to do that tonight. And speaking of the Patriots, at 9, we'll visit with Alex Shane, who writes for SB Nation's Pat's Pulpit. I had to promise Kevin I wouldn't make any jokes about deflated balls during this program. Obviously, we're too classy here to make lowbrow jokes, so we'll welcome Alex to the show. He seems like a really nice guy. Had an opportunity to chat with him a bit this week. As always, our phone lines are open and waiting for you, loyal Dolph fans. If you want to get on the air and talk about whatever's on your mind, you can give us a call here in the studio at 347-326-9461. Both of our regular contributors, Max and Lewis, will call in at some point tonight, I think. The good news is I'd like to welcome back to my show my very, very good friend, Duke. It's been so long, my friend.
It's been a while.
I have to say I get a lot of tweets asking about you, asking where you've been. It's like people thought you were taken out back behind the SB Nation warehouse and shot. This is proof of life, everyone. Duke's here. He's alive.
Yeah, call it a comeback.
It's not a comeback. We're still looking to get an intro for this show. I got to say, I started appearing on Ron Canis on Squish the Fish podcast, and he just got this great intro that, I mean, it almost sounds like a Kiss concert where it's just like pyro going off and like, you know, huge voices. It's pretty cool. And so I'm jealous. And now, like, when this show opens, it's cool to have Ryan Tannehill kind of kick us off, but at the same time, just like womp womp, you're looking for something else. So for a while there, I was thinking about being a smart ass and getting like Casey and JoJo, like All My Life is our intro, just to really upset people. But I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm working on getting something that should be a pretty decent intro if I can put it together. It's kind of ambitious, but we'll see. What's not ambitious today, Dolphins signed Daniel Thomas. Third time is the charm, I reckon. So, Duke, I mean, you have to assume this is a training camp body. I saw a couple of people say that on Twitter. It's not like you go into a season and think, like, I'm going to slot Daniel Thomas as my number one running back. But what did you think when that news came through?
I mean, yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I didn't get too upset about it because I'm not thinking this is like – they signed Isaiah Pede right before him. So, to me, it was just kind of like, yeah, they didn't get C.J. Anderson. We don't know if Miller wanted to be back or not. They kick the tires on Arian Foster a little bit, talk to some other guys. So this is just kind of like, yeah, we're just bringing in guys right now. I don't think this will prevent them from drafting a guy. I mean, if they want Ezekiel Elliott and he's there at 13, I think they would take him. Or, you know, that's who they want. I don't think either of the guys they signed today will mean anything in the long run. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think Daniel Thomas – was signed by the Bears last year. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before last. So if it was last year, then Gase got a look at him, so he kind of knows what he brings to the table. And I think Daniel Thomas is a little bit of an underrated pass-catching back. I don't mean that he's great by any means, but I think that was a part of his game that just got overlooked by fans because he was not a good running back overall. And so I think that would be, if he does stick with the team, I think that's where Gase would use him because, I mean, remember it was Daniel Thomas that juked Darrell Revis onto IR. And he just always seemed to be a guy that can make those plays in the passing game. And I don't understand why, because you think he's a big back, but he always kind of ran like a slow but shifty back. And I don't know. I just always kind of – when he got the ball on a little swing pass or something, he was somewhat kind of dangerous. So, you know, I think he will present some value there if he decided to keep him. But, again, I think it's a long shot that they keep him. I think Damian Williams could provide everything that Daniel Thomas provides. So, you know, I think right now it's Ajayi is the lead back. It is a rookie as the Robin to Ajayi's Batman. Damian Williams is the third guy, and they're all everybody else is shooting for that third spot.
I couldn't agree more. Are we still on the Jack Conklin bandwagon at 13? I know we started it, and I see no reason to get off it. I understand that there's some good corners that could be available. People view guys like Eli Apple and William Jackson III as reaches at number 13. But if you're making the pick at 13 right now, and just, I mean, assume that the board has fallen pretty much people expect it to fall, where are you going with that selection?
I mean, there are a lot of picks that I would not be disappointed with. Hargrave, I've not really got to watch any tape on a lot of other people. My computer, it fell at one point, and the screen was shattered into a million pieces, so I had to wait until I got it fixed. So I'm just now getting back into kind of watching some tape. But one guy I did like was Jack Conklin, and I think he's a guy that right now, I mean, you think about it, they brought in Bushrod. They hope he can start at guard. He's a backup tackle if one of the other guys goes down. But we can't keep our offensive line healthy. I think it was Armando tweeted or posted something about this earlier in the week, is that the offensive line pretty much is, when healthy, when we've got all five starting guys, that, you know, if Bushrod's that guy, then we have a decent starting set. It's when they have to go to backups, when you've got Jason Fox coming in. You know, that's a problem. So Jack Conklin presents a long-term option at the specifically the left tackle position. You could play him at guard. You could start him and let Albert move to guard or do whatever else you want to do. But, you know, at some point they've got to start thinking, you know, if they're not thinking we can compete and win it all this year, then what are you going to do with life after Albert? So, yeah, I mean, I would be absolutely okay with a Conklin pick. You know, I've read a lot of stuff saying he's not as athletic as some guys. He was struggling pass protection. But from what I've watched, I think he's pretty good. And you put him over there and let him get out in the running game. And, you know, I would much prefer second and four, second and five, as opposed to second and nine, like we've been used to seeing.
A couple things I want to bring up. Then we'll go to the phones real quick. And then we've got our first caller in about, I think it's like 7 minutes. You can also follow me on Twitter. I typically take questions for the show through Twitter. You can follow me at Keef, K-E-E-F, Dolphin, D-O-L-F-A-N. If you tweet me, we'll try to get your questions on the show as well. We'll go to the phones real quick. We'll go to Orlando. I think this is an old friend of the show, Dolphin fan for life. Chris, what's going on?
Nothing much. Pretty much I'm a little miffed at the rankings from ESPN and whatnot. You know, we're ranked in the 20s. Of course, the Patriots, they're top guy, even though they traded Chandler Jones and really signed – they really kind of did what we did this offseason, signing a bunch of, you know, veterans – for low-income housing, but, you know, they pretty much just ranked us in the 20s, and yet the Jets don't have a starting quarterback. They're playing ring around the rosy with, you know, Fitzpatrick. The Bills, no one knows who's going to be their starting quarterback, because the guy that they did have starting, who has been successful, he's pretty much, he wants a pay raise. So, I mean, yet because of, and on top of that, the Mo Wilkerson deal with the Jets, they still have that to get resolved, yet they're ranked in the teens, and I just don't see why.
You know, well, it's because ESPN hates the Dolphins. I mean, of course we're going to be low on that list. I mean, we could have had, in their mind, an incredible free agency period. We could have retained all of our free agents, and by retain, I mean overpay most of them outside of probably Lamar Miller. And they still would have us down there. I mean, nothing that this team does is going to qualify itself as valid or, you know, well put together in ESPN's eyes. So I pretty much gave up on ESPN when the guys they had judging free agency, I saw one of them's Lewis Riddick. That guy is a moron. And then who's he at? Field Yates. And Field Yates said that Olivier Vernon is a wall against the run, and we were pretty much idiots for walking away from him when we all know that Field Yates is not – or Field Yates. Olivier Vernon is not a wall against the run. Far from it. So I'm not a fan of Lewis Riddick. Lewis Riddick takes so many pot shots at the Dolphins that it's just completely over the top. And wasn't he a part of that 2011 Eagles dream team when they brought in guys like Asamoah and all them? I'm fairly certain he was with the Eagles front office at that point. So kind of the pot calling the kettle black if he's going to sit there and tear us down in terms of what the Dolphins are doing in free agency. So I don't really care what the clowns at ESPN have to say, and they are clowns, make no mistake. I think that's why so many people have either been shepherded over or have just gone willingly to NFL Network and NFL.com. And I mean, they have their issues as well. I thought they really jumped the shark during the 2014 draft when they kept billing up every pick as, is this where Johnny Manziel goes? I thought that was pretty weak. And it's ever since then. I mean, I like NFL Network. It is certainly the lesser of two evils if you're putting them in the same league as ESPN. But it's just, I have zero interest in what those guys have to say. I mean, yeah, I'll read the Todd McShay mock draft. I'll read the Mel Kiper mock draft. And that's pretty much it. Like, sometimes if Scouts Inc., like the stuff they put out, I'll read that. I'm always curious to see where their rankings are. And they don't put out their rankings until, I think it's like, late winter now, or like even close to early spring, like maybe a little bit before the combine. So they used to put the Scouts Inc. rankings out probably like mid to late August, like right before the college season starts. And now I don't understand why they withhold it for the entire season and then some, because I always thought that was a pretty cool way to catch up on some prospects prior to the actual season. And then you could monitor those guys. So, I mean, I don't care. And it's kind of turned into a show over at NFL Network, too, where they have Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks, and they always have these mock drafts, and I feel like they're just trolling fans. I mean, Daniel Jeremiah obviously knows what he's talking about. I think Bucky Brooks is a smart guy. But when they put it out there, they're just looking to drive viewers. You know, they're looking to drive traffic on the website, so on and so forth, which is the same strategy that ESPN has in place. I mean, that's what they're looking for. They don't care what you think. They care that you're reading it and you're on their site reading it. So it is what it is, but I don't care what ESPN has to say. I'm almost to the point where I don't really care what NFL Network, NFL.com has to say. I care about what a lot of Dolphins fans have to say. And even they go just absolutely nuts over things. Like, I saw a lot of people flipping out over Daniel Thomas. And, I mean, Duke just made a pretty strong case for why that he and Isaiah Pete are just, you know, they're camp bodies. I mean, they're guys on the roster right now. They're in there. You take them to camp, you see what happens. But it's not like you slot those guys in and think, these guys are absolutely going to play in front of Jay Ajayi this season. There's no way you look at it like that. I just want to go ahead and put out there, we got a – I think about a minute before we're joined by our first guest. So if you want to go ahead and call in and gently heckle Jets fan, I'm not opposed to that, as long as you guys are nice about it. Kyle's a really nice guy. I've actually made friends with him through that Unsquish the Fish podcast that I've appeared on a couple of times. He's done the same, and we got talking through there, and he's even though he's a Jets fan, he's a really, really nice guy. So it's good to know that there are a lot of writers and analysts out there who, even though they might cover teams that are nothing but pure evil, it's cool that you got some.
I promise I will not ask him which Miami coach they're going to take next.
Yeah, that's nice of you. So he'll be in a second. So up until that point, as I mentioned, we'll still probably take some calls during the show. The phones are always open. It's just a matter of how many people we can fit in. So if you do want to go ahead and give us a call, it is 347-326-9461. While we're waiting for our caller, Chris, Dolphin fan for life. So you were a Jalon Smith guy for a long time there. And I mean, we've seen now that they've traded back, I don't think we've talked about that too much. Who would you take at 13 right now, given what we know about the prospects in play likely at that spot?
Mm-hmm. Can I cheat and say trade back still?
Yeah,
or
if
do
you
I
want.
Have to pick at 13?
No.
I really want to trade back. I've developed a few man crushes, and yeah, I'm wrote a piece before, and I said I would still take Jalon Smith at 13, even with him having to sit down. Said a lot of fans would be mad at me, but he's just that special where if he comes back and you take him at 13, he's going to pretty much take a bullet for you no matter what. But watching some tape, I've really thought about trading back and going with Burns. I really liked what he had to say with his interview at the Pro Day, and Miami walked away pretty much, even though it was raining, fairly happy with both Burns and their safety. So, and he pretty much said, I'm going to do whatever the team that drafts me asks me to do. You want me to hold the ball during kicks? I'll do it. You want me to do this? I'll do it. Ran a 4.440, and he's my guy right now, but I know 13 is too high.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see when that guy comes into the play. I'll actually go to the phones one more time. And I'm fairly certain that when we go to the phones here, we're going to Southern California. Max, is that you?
Yes, it is.
So you have Raglan fever.
I do have Raglan fever. Yeah, I do have Reggie Raglan fever. I think, you know, I'm case zero, by the way, because I stirred Dolphins Twitter up about it the other day. But
right, I saw that.
If you look at what the Dolphins are doing, they're trying to acquire players that they can build a defense around regardless of scheme and regardless of what happens going forward. You know, that's one of the reasons you don't sign a big money free agent this offseason, because you don't know what defense you're going to be running next year. So it's a very confusing time, but you have to look at the constants. And the constants are guys like Reggie Ragland or Vernon Hargreaves. You know, a corner is a corner. Vernon Hargreaves can play man and zone. And Reggie Ragland is an inside linebacker. You know, it's a position that the Dolphins lack any serious personnel at for the last few years. I mean, Danelle Ellerbe is a joke. Kelvin Shepard was beyond a joke. I mean, he put up some stats that are pretty questionable. I mean, I think we all watched the games and can agree he didn't look like a 100-tackle player or whatever the number ended up being, you know, 90s. But the Dolphins haven't had a serious presence in the middle of the field since they had a player like Zach Thomas. I'm not saying Reggie Ragland's going to be Zach Thomas. They couldn't be more different as players. But teams were once afraid to run against the Miami Dolphins. And because of players like Zach Thomas and Jason Taylor, and then later Paul Soliai and Randy Starks and Carlos Dansby, these guys who clog the middle, you know, I'm tired of being in third and three and just like turning around because you know the team's going to convert because we don't have any presence in the middle of the field. You know, all they have to do is run away from Sue.
Yeah.
They just have to run against his side. And for the caller who I caught the tail end of your Jalen Smith discussion,
mm-hmm.
and I can't disagree any more because he will be there in the second
round. Part? Oh, yeah, with the Jalen.
With drafting Jalen Smith in the first round. Jalen Smith will be there in the second. He will be there in the third. Jalen Smith will be available. It's like if you were buying a Toyota and you said you're going to pay $300,000 for it just because you really like the car. There's no point in drafting him that high at all. Artie Burns' stock is rising, but he's not William Jackson. He's a good corner, and if a team with a strong philosophy of drafting and developing their corners, you know, a team like the Bengals, who just take a lot of corners, wants to take them late in the first round, then go for it. You know, Artie Burns, I've watched a little bit of his tape, but not much, and he's a really solid player.
I like him. Yeah.
He's right. Yeah, I like him. I don't like him 13th overall.
No,
but,
I don't think
know,
that would
if we
happen.
Were picking, if we were picking in the mid 20s, then sure, Artie Burns is fine. But I can tell you that William Jackson's stock is rising.
Oh,
and
for
I can
sure.
tell you, based on people I've talked to, by the time we get to late April, 13th overall might not be such a silly spot to take him.
I don't think it will be. I think that he's really good. I've got a couple of calls coming in, but I'll ask you one question, and then I'll get to the next call, and it's this.
Yeah.
Would you take Eli Apple or William Jackson? Because both guys are experiencing that sort of that
it's
rising
really
tide
question.
With their draft stock right now. And, I mean, both of them present different skill sets. So, I mean, which guy you like?
Right. Yeah. The one thing is this. I think when you're looking at a corner who you can build around at the number one position, I think when you look at what the New York Jets had for a few years, it's actually a pretty good template. They had a really technically sound corner in Darrell Revis. Not just technically sound, obviously. Darrell Revis was the best corner in football for many years. But they paired him with one of those longer corners who might have a tendency to get burned a little bit more, but he's a solid tackler. I think William Jackson's ball skills are what really sell me on him. I think William Jackson, he has really good hands for a defensive back. He knows how to play to the football, despite a size issue. You know, he might not be an outstanding tackler. You know, he's not the kind of guy who's going to be busting up screens. But he's the kind of player that you want in terms of being able to build a secondary around.
Sure.
You know, the Dolphins have Rashad Jones, but Rashad Jones only has a couple years left on his contract. And the safety market is so wacky, you never know if you're going to be able to re-sign a guy like that.
Yeah.
So, and I think Eli Apple, by the way, I think the upside is lower. I think it's
I would agree
a little
that.
Bit lower in terms. Yeah, it's like, if we're going to take a risk, because let's be real, cornerback is, outside of maybe quarterback, the hardest position to scout.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many factors that go into being a good defensive back. It's so scheme dependent that it's such a hard position to draft. And that's one of the reasons I'm in favor of Ragland. Miami can't take a risk. If they take
no.
a risk and whiff, then they're just set back. I mean, they're set back even more than you would think. They need to go with a guy who's going to contribute. And for me, Reggie Ragland is that guy. And Vernon Hargreaves is that guy. And I'm pretty convinced that William Jackson is that guy. I'm about 50-50 on whether Eli Apple is that guy.
I think
and
William
Jack
Jackson
is that guy.
Yeah, I like Jack Conklin. Jack Conklin's going to be my favorite guy, likely. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Northern New Jersey, I believe. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. This is none other than Kyle. Sorry, I tried to connect a couple minutes earlier, but I was trying to do it directly through my internet through Blog Talk Radio, but it just wasn't connected, so just called in through the phone.
Then I'm sorry, we can't do this interview. So, no, I'm absolutely kidding. So I'll go ahead and get this thing started. Everyone, this is Kyle Smith. He's with it's AFC East Bros, right?
That's correct, because it's my brother and myself. He's a big Buffalo Bills fan. I'm a big New York Jets fan. We always would talk and debate, go back and forth, talking about the AFC East. And we said, you know what, let's start a show.
You know what would be the cool thing is if in your guys' house as kids, you were dressed like Rex with like this sort of, you know, the sleeveless vest and then like the undershirt, and your brother had like the Marv Levy sweater on.
Oh man, my brother was the biggest Rex basher ever. And in the moment that the Bills signed him, you know, it's a pretty good hire actually. So,
of course.
Nobody likes Rex until
he's a part of their team.
Yeah. And then you have a roller coaster of feelings when he is with your team. You love when you win and you back up all that trash talk, but then when you lose and you have all the scandals and all that kind of stuff, you're like, oh my God, circus. Can we get away from the circus? So
you're the first Jets fan I've ever brought on the show, so you hold that distinction. I don't know what that's worth to you. But we'll go ahead, and this is sort of our pre-draft AFC East roundup, if you will. I couldn't get a Bills fan. I didn't realize that your brother was the guy. We can probably bring him on next week. But I just want to go ahead and kind of scope out the rest of the division, since obviously if we're on this show, we spend all of our time talking about the Dolphins and signing Daniel Thomas, which apparently his nickname is Vagina Feet. I did not realize that. I know it now. That's horrifying.
Wow.
It's all about creativity, Kyle. So if we're talking about the Jets and their quarterback issues right now, where do they stand? Because we've heard about the whole Fitzpatrick thing. And, you know, you got Brandon Marshall out there pining for him and whatnot. Where do the Jets stand when it comes to their quarterbacks?
You know, it's all Fitzpatrick. It really is. And it's only a matter of time before he comes back to the Jets. And he's going to have to accept their lowball offer. Maybe he'll give it a little bit extra, maybe a couple more million. But this reported $16 million a season that he wants, he won't even get close to that. He'd be very lucky to get double digits in terms of average, you know, value per year. Not going to even get close to it. Because the reality is that no one else wants him for that price. No one else is willing to give him what the Jets are offering, you know? So, you know, all this, the Jets are interested in Kaepernick, the Jets are interested in RG3. All of that was just a ploy to get RG3 back down to reality. Not RG3, Fitzpatrick. You know, they were scaring him, or at least trying to. He's a smart guy, went to Harvard. He's not going to fall for that. But at the end of the day, if let's say Denver does make a move and trades for McCown, or maybe they do make a move and trade for Kaepernick, at what point then? Who is Ryan Fitzpatrick's other suitor? Because no one else is interested other than those two. And right now the Jets' offer is much more, you know, better than what Denver's offer is for Fitzpatrick. So eventually he's going to come back to the Jets. Will it be before the draft, slightly before the draft, after the draft? I don't really know. However, I do think that he'll be the starter for this upcoming season. But as a Jets fan, we really saw what you can get out of Ryan Fitzpatrick in week 16, or week 17 for that matter. Goes up to Buffalo, where he used to call home, tosses three interceptions in the fourth quarter, and you lose the season right there. Now, that's not all his fault. Didn't get great pass protection in that game. Did not have his safety blanket in Bilal Powell. But Fitz is going to fit. And Leotis McKelvin, who played many years with Fitzpatrick up in Buffalo, he said Fitzpatrick takes shots. And Leotis baited Fitzpatrick to throw that red zone interception late in the game. And that was a game changer, because if the Jets score on that drive, you're talking the Jets take the lead if it's a touchdown, or they get within, you know, 4 points or whatever it was if they kick the field goal there, totally changes the game around. But when he tossed that interception, it completely was a game changer. So I think he is the guy for 2016. However, if you're the Jets, you got to know he's not the long-term solution. So who is then? I really like Jared Goff. Now, there are reports out there that maybe he'll slide. Benjamin Albright has definitely been not on the Jared Goff train. Doesn't like him, you know, 9-inch hands, too small for me. Listen, I like the kid. Is he ready? Is he going to, you know, be a week one starter and kind of, you know, tear it up out of the gate? I don't think so. However, I think it would be a good situation if you can draft him and sit him under Fitzpatrick. Now, is Jared Goff going to fall to pick 20? You know, maybe if the 49ers pass up on him. It's kind of also so hard to see the Rams passing up on him, or maybe some other team tries to trade up. I don't know. My whole thing is this. The Jets are actively pursuing a Muhammad Wilkerson trade right now. They're not just listening to offers. they're actively shopping him, much like they did a couple years ago with Darrell Revis. And the Jets always get themselves in these situations where they're trading away their best players. But the reality is they don't want to sign him to a long-term deal for what he wants. So you got this piece in Muhammad Wilkerson. Now, is he going to get you a first-rounder? No, he's not. But could he get you maybe a high second-rounder or mid-second-rounder? And could you use him as a trading piece to maybe move up into the draft? And if Goff falls to pick 11, pick 12, something like that, and trade up and get him,
you
I would certainly
it.
Like that.
There it is. There it is. That's exactly – that's what I've been looking at throughout the process. It makes a ton of sense. And you look at both the Bills and the Jets, and the teams that they're going to want to jump, the team that they're going to want to jump is the Rams. Because if either of those teams is sold on Paxton Lynch, or if Jared Goff or Carson Wentz falls, then those teams would be hard-pressed not to give up a serious bounty of picks to get there. And the problem for each of those teams is that they other teams can leverage them against one another. You know, the Jets and Bills front offices aren't exactly willingly giving each other information this offseason. So you have teams who are going to pit them against each other and drive the price up to trade into one of those picks. Let's say, for example, with the Saints, a team who needs players that they could select later, or the Buccaneers are in that same boat. And so the only team – I don't know that the Raiders will move out of their pick because I think they want to get a defensive back before that late teens phase. But – and the Dolphins clearly won't trade their pick to an AFC East team. So it comes down to those other teams ahead of the Dolphins to see what the Jets and Bills have to do to get up there and get their quarterback before the Rams.
Absolutely.
So is that what is
and
that
I think,
the Jets
I think
are...
Muhammad Wilkerson is a very convincing piece. You know, imagine if you're Tampa and you get that call and you say, we can pair Gerald McCoy with Muhammad Wilkerson on that defensive line, now have Brent Grimes in the back end of the defense with Alteron Verner, and that's scary. That's a scary defensive front right there with those two players.
So it pretty much comes down to a staring match between the Jets and Fitzpatrick that is interesting, especially because you're banking on the fact that Denver doesn't get incredibly desperate. I don't know how they could get more desperate considering the situation they're in with their quarterback, but things that'll surprise you. So, Kyle, with that pick that the Jets hold in the first round, right now, who do you think their primary target is with that selection?
You know, it's hard to really say. The Jets have been trying to solve the edge rush for a long time now. You know, you think back to when the last time the Jets had a dominant edge rusher, and you'd have to think all the way back to John Abraham. John Abraham, you're talking well over 10 years ago since he suited up in a Jets uniform. So they went out and they tried to get Olivier Vernon, you know, a guy who you guys are very familiar with. And apparently they were in the Olivier Vernon sweepstakes up until it got to around $15 million per year. Now, I don't know your guys' personal stance on him. A lot of the educated Dolphins fans that I know that he's not even close to being worth that. So I'm glad that the Jets eventually tapped out. But, you know, pursuing a player like that and being willing to pay him that much money just shows you how desperate they are for an edge rusher. So Noah Spence, for example, you know, after having a less than stellar combine, could he slip down to 20? You know, he was a guy that around Senior Bowl time, you know, he was the talk of the town. People were talking, oh, you know, he's cleaned up his life, he could definitely go top 10. But then when he ran that 4.8, didn't have a great vertical, all that kind of stuff, people are talking about him sliding now. So maybe they'll go and pursue him at pick 20. They definitely need an edge rusher. It's just something that they've really been lacking. I'm hearing a lot of mock drafts saying Leonard Floyd. The little that I've watched of Floyd, haven't been impressed at all. So personally, I'd like them to stay away. Maybe a Darren Lee. I do like him a lot. I think he can do a lot of things for you. Maybe he'll play a Deion Buchanan type of role who Todd Bowles had back when he was the Arizona defensive coordinator. And I think the Jets are definitely trying to upgrade the tackle position, too. When you think about it, the Brickishaw Ferguson, he's got a $14 million cap hit right now. If they were to outright cut him, they would save $10 million in cap space. Let me tell you what, the Brickishaw Ferguson, multiple Pro Bowls throughout his career, former fourth overall pick, the guy has had a great career. But the reality is, you know, he's not even a good pass blocker at this stage in his career. He's never really been a good run blocker. He's an atrocious run blocker at this stage and an average at best pass blocker. So if a Taylor Decker slides or a Jack Conklin slides, I think you like him, Keith, Jack Conklin, that is.
Oh, yeah.
Do you draft him and then maybe cut DeBrickashaw, get you extra $10 million in cap space, and then maybe you could do other things with that? I don't know. Bruno Giacobini, horrible right tackle. You cut him, you'll save $4 or $5 million. So I definitely think they would like to upgrade the tackle position too. So if they get a guy who slides to pick 20, whether it's Conklin, Decker, we know it's not going to be Stanley or Tunsil, maybe they'll pull the trigger there as well.
Giacomini's eyebrows frighten me.
There's a lot of things that frighten you about Giacomini. He's one of those players that he's like a wannabe tough guy. Like, he's one of those guys that he'll push a guy in the back after the play is over, and then the guy will turn around and start fighting him, and then he'll get his butt kicked. You know, he's like, he's known for getting so many personal fouls. Same thing with his buddy, his tag team partner, Willie Colon, who is another offensive lineman for the Jets, who got a personal foul penalty in the Giants game, which Willie Colon didn't even suit up for.
Getting back to one of your previous statements, I don't know a Dolphins fan who thinks Olivier Vernon was worth anywhere close to what he got, that $17 million a year he got from the Giants. The only people I've seen support that signing are Giants fans and Adam Schein with CBS Sports. What did he say? An incredible day for the Giants, an incredibly expensive day on two players, Olivier Vernon and Janoris Jenkins. They absolutely emptied it out for those guys. If it had been the Dolphins doing that, you would have just, Twitter would have gone nuts just talking about how much the Dolphins suck. So I'm kind of amused by that. So I think we actually I just saw somebody call in and then they just dropped. I think that might have been Lewis. Lewis, if you're there, call back in. I'm a big Conklin guy. I actually think that a lot of Conklin's measurables remind me a lot of DeBrickashaw Ferguson, actually. So it's kind of interesting that we're having this comparison right now. Although I love Conklin as a run blocker. I think he's a better pass blocker than people realize. I think a lot of people were hammering him for the supposed lack of athleticism, but I thought he showed up to the combine. I thought he was one of the most athletic tackles there outside of Jason Spriggs. So I thought he looked really good in that regard. I've had a lot of people call it a luxury pick. It's not a luxury pick when your offensive line is as bad as Miami's. It's garbage. It is an absolute tire-filled dumpster fire. It's bad. So if you're drafting your left tackle of the future for your quarterback that you have now, that's not a bad call. But, I mean, as Max was talking about before you jumped on, there are guys out there who also serve and would fill serious needs on the defensive side of the football. And I mean, Reggie Ragland would be one of them. Any cornerback.
Ragland fever 2016. It's happening.
Yeah.
Ragland
Ragland fever. So we just copyrighted that. We're going to start making money off of it now. Any cornerback with a pulse probably constitutes his fair game regarding Dolphins' interest. So there's a lot of guys out there, and it would be hard to look at a corner and look at Jack Conklin and say, like, yeah, we need Conklin more than the corner, because, frankly, you need them both. So, I mean, that's where it's going to get tricky
Dolphins. Wait, there's another angle to that, which is how bad is the defense going to be even with a corner, and how much better can the offense be? You know, if we're talking about the difference, this defense is going to be abysmal next season. I mean, the Dolphins are going to be allowing 28 to 40 points a game, and I personally think they're going to rival the New Orleans Saints defense from last season in terms of just how mediocre they are. But how much difference could a player on offense make? That's my argument for a player like Ezekiel Elliott, if he falls, which he won't, but or a player like Conklin, who, you know, let's be honest, while Juwan James has been derailed by injuries, he hasn't been that good when he's been at right tackle. He's been okay.
I think
He can be good, but why not try to move? Maybe he could play well at guard. And maybe you can keep Conklin out there at right tackle for a couple years, let him get comfortable, let him do the Nate Solder routine, and then move him over.
I think the logic here is that you don't necessarily want to chase any sort of position. You're looking at it, as long as it's a horizontal board and you have your needs in mind. I thought that Duke put it pretty well, that if you're drafting Jack Conklin, you're drafting him because Brandon Albert's not going to play too much longer. And frankly, once Albert's out of there, what are you doing at left tackle? Jermon Bushrod? I like Jermon Bushrod. Great player, but not really a cornerstone guy at this point that you're going to put over on the left side of the line and be like, well, that's done for the next 5 to 10 years. So I think that the logic I would put in place for a guy like Conklin, it's tougher to do with Ezekiel Elliott just because the first round back thing is tough to argue unless you're looking at a guy like a Todd Gurley. Although I will say that I think Ezekiel Elliott is one of the six best players in this draft. So overall, so if you're looking at Jack Conklin, and I do like him a lot, but if you think that he's going to be your left tackle of the future and you feel that at that number 13 pick, that pound for pound, he is the best player available at the positions you're looking at, then I'd say, yeah, you can make a case for that because now you're drafting your guy for the next 10 years. And one thing I want to point out is Mike Tannenbaum's gotten beaten up a lot for a lot of, and we'll get into Mike Tannenbaum actually in a second here, because I'm sure Kyle probably has a thing or two to say about him. For a lot of the bad picks that Mike Tannenbaum made for the Jets, the two he made in 2006 still play for that team, and that's Ferguson and Nick Mangold. So, and Ferguson, I mean, has declined a little bit, but Brickashaw Ferguson was an outstanding left tackle in a draft where guys like Vince Young and Reggie Bush went ahead of him, and Mario Williams. So there's arguments to be made, and that's why I don't come out and say, like, it has to be Jack Conklin, because I think that Max is right, that the defense is going to be bad regardless. And, I mean, you're going to go ahead and you're going to put guys in there, and you're building for the future now. You're not looking for that immediate injection where you put that guy in and say, like, okay, now the secondary is taken care of. Everything is much better. It's not going to be that simple, unfortunately. Kyle, Mike Tannenbaum takes a beating from a lot of Dolphins fans for a few reasons. What is your overall opinion of Mike Tannenbaum since he was at one point the GM for your team?
You know, I think when I first started following the NFL and football really closely, I think I was a huge fan. Because when you're a new fan to the game and you don't understand all the nuances, you wonder, why aren't teams making trades more? Why aren't they signing these big free agents? You want to be one of those teams that's very active. And one thing about Mike Tannenbaum, he was with the Jets, he was very active. Not afraid to trade up in the Jets. Did it several times. Did it to select a future Hall of Famer, Darrelle Revis. Did it to select draft bust Mark Sanchez, moved up from pick 17 to 5, which, by the way, he got a steal of a trade for that. When you're talking moving up pick 17 to 5, he really didn't give up all that much.
And not a very good draft either. I mean, that's the thing. I think you and I have talked about this before, that the thing he's guilty of most in that draft is he swung for the fences in a draft where a lot of players just weren't very good. And you had guys like Clay Matthews going 26th overall.
Yeah. I mean, not only that, too, but it's just like you're talking about drafts that had three picks. You're talking about drafts that had four picks, five selections, year after year after year, and wasn't even hitting on those. You know, trading up to draft Stephen Hill when, you know, Russell Wilson's on the board. And Alshon Jeffrey went a couple picks later. You're talking about, but then again, he's got a couple really big hits. He also did draft Muhammad Wilkerson at pick 30. And let's go back to that Darrelle Revis trade, too. I mean, think about it. It's not like Revis fell into his hand, right? And that was, by the way, Aaron Ross was also there, and there was a debate going back and forth. Well, maybe some people think Aaron Ross is better. Well, Mike Tannenbaum saw enough of Revis to say, listen, this kid is so good. Let's trade up to get him. So he's got his fair share of hits. However,
and a lot of his misses, too, are kind of excusable in a sense. I mean, I still don't think he's a good evaluator of talent. But you look at a lot of the misses that he made, and they were mistakes that any team in the league would have made. It's just the difference is that Mike Tannenbaum, when he was with the Jets, was willing to give up more than any other team to take those risks. He's a risk taker. And he was willing to do that and to go up and get players like Stephen Hill and say, like, you know, there wasn't a team in the league that wasn't interested in Stephen Hill. You know, you're 6'5 and you run a 4'4.
That's interesting.
4-3-6.
Mike Tannenbaum.
4-3-6.
Right. 4-3-6. Right. I sometimes round up during conversation. But he – it's so – it makes so much sense when you're looking at it at the time. And then later, if the talent doesn't pan out, you're just gambling when you move up and get players like that. And, I mean, for a while there, it looked like it was really working. And his approach with the Jets kind of clashed with Woody Johnson. And, you know, Woody Johnson had a stronger football opinion than Stephen Ross does. Stephen Ross has a business opinion that relates to the Dolphins and how they excite the fans. Woody Johnson actually had a football opinion. And Stephen Ross doesn't sit there and have an opinion, you know, on the X's nose of it. So it's going to be an interesting change for him in that dynamic to be able to make some of those big free agent signings or to run the ship with a little bit less input in terms of the X's and O's from the owner.
Yeah. You know, some other things about Revis and Tannenbaum is, in retrospect, Mike Tannenbaum gets a lot of flack from this from Jets fans, is Revis went through several holdouts in his career with the Jets. And the whole Hard Knocks season, 2010, when Revis held out, this is kind of an organizational problem, is Revis had 3 years left on his rookie deal. 3 years. Now, all the good teams, they're not going to even begin negotiations until someone's got 1 year left on their deal. That's just what they do. However, the Jets brass said, you know what, we want to lock you up long term. So Revis's reps took that as, okay, that sounds great. And then he took that as a piece to hold out. And they knew that the Jets were so desperate. And then they made this Band-Aid type of contract. And when they did that, they took out the Jets' ability to franchise tag Revis. And that's a big reason why he was ultimately traded to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because the way the Jets were looking at it is, we can't franchise the guy at the end of the year. He just tore his ACL. We're not sure he's the same player. It's not like we can do a one-year tester type of deal. So when they didn't have the rights to franchise tag him, kind of led to his ultimate trade. So, you know, and take it for what it's worth. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe Mike Tannenbaum wasn't good in those negotiations. I mean, I know at one point he offered him like a 10-year deal worth about $12 million per year, but only like $40 million guaranteed, and Revis's refs like laughed in his face. But, yeah, I mean, so he's got his fair share of really good hits. But he's got his fair share of misses, but just definitely a very risky GM. And we definitely saw that with his trades, too, trading for Braylon Edwards, trading for Antonio Cromartie, trading for Santonio Holmes, you know. But we're giving up early draft picks to go and get those guys. Braylon Edwards was like a third-round pick. Cromartie ended up being a second-round pick. Santonio Holmes, former Super Bowl MVP, fifth-round pick, maybe not so bad. But however, like, this is what I said the last time we spoke, Keith, is when you do that, you're giving up your draft capital. You're giving away your ability to do what the Seahawks did and find guys like Richard Sherman in the fifth round, right, to find guys like Cam Chancellor in the fourth or fifth round, whatever he went, when you give up all those draft picks. So, I mean, Mike Tannenbaum, I think a lot of Dolphins fans have probably also looked at it like, well, when he was with the Jets, we used to beat the Jets up, right? We went into their house week 17 and kicked their butts and stopped them from going to the playoffs, and we clinched the playoff berth. Why are we going to hire the guy that we beat up on? And let's not forget this, too. The Dolphins had a winning record against Rex Ryan when Rex Ryan was the head coach of the Jets. So I think Dolphins fans probably also look at it like that. Like, you know, we used to beat this guy. You know, he was a failed GM in New York. Why do we want him here?
The Revis trade is interesting. I was going to mention that in 2007, I think you guys traded up, I'm going off memory, you traded with Carolina to jump ahead of Pittsburgh, right? To get that guy?
Shoot, I wish I knew exactly who we jumped, but you might know better than me, but it was like around, we were right around like pick 22 or something, and we moved
and
up
it was
to
pick
14,
right? Yeah, and then Carolina traded down. I want to say they took John Beason. I'm totally going off memory here. And that was a bad draft too. He had some really good players. You know, you had Patrick Willis, Marshawn Lynch ended up being a really good player, even though I can only imagine what Buffalo fans felt like watching that guy play, because I always thought his effort was just kind of iffy when he was in Buffalo. Then he goes to Seattle and he's some sort of world beater. So I always thought that was.
Yeah, I wouldn't try hard to stay in Buffalo either.
I see what you did there.
Marshawn, he used to bash Buffalo when he was there. He used to say, like, there's nothing to do in Buffalo. And he's not the only one. I think McGahee was very critical about his time in Buffalo, another first-round running back for the Buffalo Bills. Bills seem to draft a lot of running backs in the first round. C.J. Spiller, quite a few.
Jim Kelly said not so nice things about Buffalo when he ran off to the USFL. I always thought that was kind of awkward.
Jim Kelly didn't say bad things about Buffalo. Jim Kelly actively refused to play for Buffalo and just didn't do it.
Well, they asked him. They interviewed him about it. When he played with the Houston Gamblers, and they're like, why did you make this decision? He's like, well, where would you rather be, Houston or Buffalo? And I'm like, well, that won't come back to haunt you at all. And then, you know, 2 years later, he's in Buffalo with those, when they had the special colored face masks. We have about, we got about 10 minutes before our next caller. So what I want to do now is we have this thing. I'm trying to come up with a name for it. It's just kind of like a lightning round where I'm just going to throw questions at you, Kyle, and you can just give me short answers. It's just kind of like, you know, a rapid fire thing. So will Geno Smith ever quarterback the New York Jets?
It's a possibility. Don't rule it out.
Worst GM, Mike Tannenbaum or John Idzik?
Idzik.
He's a cap guy. I love that. Was probably my favorite thing about John Idzik, that you literally could not say his name without pointing out that he's a cap guy. Finish this sentence. The Jets will reach the playoffs in 2016 if...
if they are very injury-free. They have a very healthy season.
If you had to write an epitaph for the Rex Ryan era in New York, what would it say?
The highs and lows of Rex Ryan, the roller coaster ride. I don't know.
Yeah, somebody get me a goddamn snack. So
you know, that's even better.
Oh, boy. The one free agent you wanted to sign but didn't.
And of all time or this year or what?
We'll go this year.
This year. Who did I really want? Shoot. I kind of wanted Prince Amukamara. For $5 million, I would have taken him. We could use another corner if he was healthy, but.
The one free agent you're glad New York didn't sign.
Olivier Vernon. Easy.
Oh, yeah, I figured that was going to be your answer. Who posts more reps on the bench, Nick Mangold or Holly Mangold?
Oh, that's definitely got to be Holly Mangold for sure.
She is jacked. Are you worried about year two with Brandon Marshall? It's been a very poor trend with his previous teams.
I think that Jets fans are delusional if they think he's going to replicate that production. I mean, I think a lot of them are saying, oh, listen, well, Fitz didn't even have a full training camp to work with him. You know, Fitz was still recovering from a leg injury when he got there, and he couldn't even complete a 5-yard out. And Brandon Marshall even said it himself. Well, yeah, so a lot of these Jets fans are thinking easily they're going to, you know, build on their success and they're going to have more of a rapport with one another. Listen, Brandon Marshall just turned 32 years old, right? He had a great season, but he was relatively injury-free. And you look at his last season in Chicago, he was really banged up. And he was banged up at certain points throughout this season. One little nagging injury throughout the entire season, and it could be bad news. And I'm not really worried about, you know, Brandon Marshall and his character concerns. You know, is he going to beat up his wife or, God forbid, something else? But I just think that, you know, eventually, you know, age is going to really show. And, yeah.
Well, then, right around that time, it's when he starts slipping on McDonald's bags. Or I remember there's a bunch of stuff he got into right before he was traded to Chicago. What's the defining characteristic of the Todd Bowles regime thus far?
Much more quiet. You don't know what's going on. You know, less stuff gets leaked to the media. You know, one thing that the Jets have all these guys in their building, Jermaine Gresham, Kelvin Beachum, all these guys. But you weren't finding out until after they left. They had already left the building and concluded their visit. Under the previous regime, you would hear, oh, this guy is going to visit the Jets. Like, there was no secrets. The Jets were the big circus. Everything now is much more quiet. You know, they're not speaking to the media. So it's really different for sure.
I have a feeling that circus is now down in Miami. I have a feeling.
Maybe.
No, Mike Tannenbaum learned from that, and that's one of the reasons that one of their biggest priorities was kind of righting the ship in terms of leaks to the media.
Definitely.
And a lot less gets out. You know, I talked to someone who works for the team who said that when they're in the cafeteria at the same time as Mike Tannenbaum, they don't take out their cell phone.
Wow.
That's how
look at that.
He's trying to keep it down in Miami.
Hey, Kyle, better chin, Tom Brady or Kyle Brady?
Tom Brady. You know, we hate the guy, but he's a good-looking guy. Can't
finish this sentence. Much. Oh, we hate him plenty. Finish this sentence. Being a Jets fan is?
It's tough, man. No Super Bowl. Forget victories. We haven't had a Super Bowl appearance in well over 45 years. It's tough.
Oh, I mean, we're kind of in the same camp. You know, we haven't won one in 42 years now. So, Kyle
when
Smith.
When last have you guys been to one?
The last time, that would have been the 80s.
Early 80s. Yeah,
84 season, so January 85, when they got absolutely beaten down by the San Francisco 49ers. Good times. I was nine months old at the time, but I'm told it was terrible. I want to go ahead, and we're probably going to have to move on to our next guest, but I want to mention this is Kyle Smith of AFC East Bros. Kyle, where can people find you online and on Twitter?
Twitter is at AFC East Bros. No underscores, no nothing like that. And you can find our show. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. And we usually do our show Tuesday evenings. And you can call in if you're an angry Dolphins fan and you think that I'm too critical of Mike Tannenbaum. By all means, call in and share your thoughts and opinion.
I don't think you're going to get a lot of heat from Dolphins fans about that, just going out on a limb on that one. We're going to go ahead and move on, but I'm thank you very much for coming on the show, and we'd love to have you back soon. And I thought this was great.
Absolutely. I had fun, guys. And if you want my brother on sometime, you know, just let me know.
Yeah, I'll email you, and we'll get that taken care of.
All right, Keith. And who's this? Max on the other? Max also?
Yes, sir.
Yes, the Max Himmelridge.
All right, guys. It was fun. Take care.
Take care, Kyle. That was good. I like it when guys come on the show, and if they're not a fan of the Dolphins, but they're always willing to speak candidly about their team. And as I say that, we'll just jump into our next guest, Alex Shane. He's with Pat's Pulpit. He is a writer over at that site. Alex, what's going on?
How's it going, guys?
Good. I just mentioned to Kyle that he was the first Jets fan I've brought on the show. You are the first Pat's fan, and I feel like this is probably a little bit of a bigger deal just because for obvious reasons that now that Rex is kind of out of New York, there isn't that sort of, there's still a dislike, but I don't think there's a flaming vitriol going on right now between the fan bases as there was when Rex was there. It's died down maybe just a hair, but the Patriots Dolphins thing burns as bright as ever, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's always hard. This is going to sound so smug, but, you know, when the Patriots are kind of the top all the time, you use the word rivalry very loosely around New England because, you know, you get spoiled so quick being a Pats fan that you don't get as hyped up as you used to back in the early 90s when the teams were all 6-10 in a good year and you were just trying to go for draft picks. But it's still a good rivalry, and I like what the Dolphins are doing. I like the trajectory they're on, so I'm really hoping that rivalry kind of comes back a lot stronger going forward.
Ooh, you're already saying nice things. You know how to do this. This is good. I was going to bring up
other thing we really should say about it too is that the Dolphins always play up to the Patriots well. I mean, you know, they show up in those games more so in Miami. You know, the last few years, it's never a sure thing for New England when they come in there, and you would think, you know, the Dolphins are hardly a competitive team in that regard, you know, playing up to someone of the Patriots level, but they always manage to put up a fight in Dolphin Stadium. You know,
no, that's true.
Last year was the second, I think they're 3-4 in the last, they're 3-1 in the last 4 years in the Sun Life Stadium against the Patriots.
And
yeah, I mean, it's always good to get the AFC East rivalry, and you do. You get up for divisional opponents. It's just the reality of it, and they mean more whether you want to admit it or not because it's important, and you see the teams twice a year.
But we admit it. And, you know, it's tough. It's a hostile environment down at the stadium because there's so many people who are native to Massachusetts who spend their winters in Florida, which happens to coincide with football season. So you end up with a situation where it's, you know, I went this year. I was there for Dolphins-Patriots Week 17. You know, probably 60% Patriots fans, 70% Patriots fans. It's pretty abysmal for South Florida sports fans. And so it's like a hostile environment. You get a little territorial. You say, like, you know, this is our stadium, and here you guys are rolling in full force. And so it makes for an interesting – I think it gets the players pumped up, and I think it makes for an interesting environment.
Yeah, I mean, it's never hard to get a New Englander to go down to Miami for the weekend in December or January. It's never a tough sell.
The crazy thing is that they live there. Like, because they all, a lot of them move there to retire, or a lot of them are just live there in the winter because of the weather, and it happens to coincide with football season. And so it makes for an interesting situation because, like, you're interacting with them so often. I mean, like, you see a lot of Dolphins gear when you're walking around, but there's plenty of Patriots, you know, license plates and flags on the cars during the season. And South Florida fans are pretty fair weather, so there are a lot of, like, people who are native to South Florida who have also adopted the Patriots because they've been the dominant team in the last 15 years.
Yeah, sure. You're going to get that anywhere you go.
There are a lot of friendly Patriots fans tweeting us right now. I'm blown away. It's weird.
You know, it's funny. I feel like Patriots fans, they get a bad rap as these kind of arrogant, snooty, over-entitled, obnoxious jerks. And to a degree, we've earned that moniker and we'll proudly wear it. But, you know, I feel like there are a lot of Patriots fans that just want to talk football. They want to speak to their fans, interact with their fans, enjoy the discussions and discourse and debate that goes on. And whenever there's a forum where we're allowed to do that without immediately being called cheaters and cheatriots and Belichick, we actually come out and have a lot of good things to say. So I'm really grateful for the chance to come on and talk football.
I've interacted with a lot of nice Patriots fans, and a lot of you guys are assholes. So
yeah, of course.
It's like a fairly good balance. I mean, but that's any fan base, you know, any fan base. I say this, other than, like, the Packers, because I don't think there's a mean person in Wisconsin. I think
that's not true. That's not true at all.
When you're a good team, your fans are more into it. You know, if you're a Dolphins fan, like, what are you going to fight for? What are you going to yell at someone about? Like, there's nothing to yell about. We're not a good football team. If you're a Patriots fan and the league is out to get you because, you know, everyone brings their A game against the Patriots because they want to beat the Patriots. You know, it's like playing Duke in basketball, or it's like playing the Warriors. You know what I mean? It's everyone wants to beat them more than they want to beat any other team. So you're always on the defensive as a Patriots fan, you know, trying to fight between things like Spygate, Deflategate, the reputation that Bill Belichick has developed, or, you know, the easy ways that there are to make fun of Tom Brady, even though no one should make fun of Tom Brady because he lives a life that anyone would want to live.
Sure.
But it's always an interesting dynamic with those fans who have that fight because their teams are good. I mean, you know, I think that's the same thing as why I don't think people hate Cowboys fans as much now as they did when the Cowboys were winning Super Bowls. It's the same thing. You know, that dominant team is always the team that you're kind of – that you're on the defensive against.
Yeah, of course. And obviously a big part of being a sports fan is hating another team. Like, we love to hate other teams. It's really, really fun. Like, that dynamic is enjoyable. And we support our team, whoever we root for, and we root against whoever the other team is. And we love it, and we can't get enough of it. And – I don't see why we should, you know, talk about it in a way that now call a spade here. You know, the Patriots are good. They win a lot. They're not a very likable team for a lot of reasons. And when they lose and bad things happen to them, I get very happy. And that's totally fine. As long as we can call a spade and be honest about it, I'm all for it.
If you're talking about the football part, the Patriots have gotten some pretty high marks in free agency this spring. How do you feel about that? How do you think it's going?
I think it's gone really well. I mean, it's kind of the same song and dance around Patriots Nation every March free agency opens and the Dolphins go really big, really early, and the Patriots kind of do nothing for the first couple of days, let the market settle a bit, see what the price ranges are for various positions, positional groups, positional players. And then once the dust has settled, the initial frenzy has died down, they start addressing the needs that they have to go after. I did not see the Martellus Bennett signing coming out, the trade coming out at all. I loved that move. It makes their offense extremely dynamic. I thought that the Chris Long signing was very good. Just picked up Terrence Knighton today, adding up some beefle on the defensive line after they shipped Chandler Jones off to Arizona for Cooper in that second round pick. So while none of the splashes they've made have been huge, no quote unquote sexy signings, they're filling needs with quality talent. They're acquiring depth. They're not done yet. There's still some holes I'd like to see them fill through the draft and more free agency, maybe some more trades. But so far, I really can't be upset with how they've done.
What were your thoughts when the Chandler Jones news came out about the trade for Cooper and the two?
You know, I was happy about the Chandler Jones trade. You know, he was a free agent after this year. This is probably his last year, especially based on the value the D tackles were getting in this year's free agency class. There's just no way he was going to get the kind of money from New England he would have gotten anywhere else. So he basically would have walked for free last year, and they're able to get a second-round pick for him and a former college stud who's a – I wouldn't call him a first-round bust yet. A lot of injury problems, kind of lost his job on the depth chart. But, you know, a project and some rotational offensive linemen, to say the least. They got some value for him. Chandler Jones was a good player. He wasn't a beast. He wasn't an absolute stud. He's the kind of guy that faded down the stretch, would always start off very strong and then get injured later in the season. When he was needed the most, he wouldn't really show up. So I think it was a vintage Belichick move. You move a guy while he still has value, and you replace him with either one or two players elsewhere that can get the job done in a different capacity.
I thought Cooper was a really good guard when he came out of North Carolina in that draft where you had Cooper and Chance Warmack as these sort of like big-time guard prospects. And, yeah, it just didn't really work out for Cooper. So I'd say that right now it could work out for both sides, because I think that as Arizona retools their offensive line, they've got like DJ Humphries at some point becomes a primary tackle for them. They've got Jared Beldier in there. They've really built up their interior. So I thought that was a pretty fair deal. And I thought that on top of the whole Cooper thing is he had a lot of people last year talking about the issues New England had with keeping their skill position guys healthy.
Yeah.
But a big deal was the health of the offensive line, and that really started with losing Nate Solder, whom I'm actually a big fan of. I love University of Colorado tackles. I talk about that on the show all the time. I don't know why, but I do. And I thought that when he went down, and then it just started this sort of like domino effect where it's like that offensive line just could not remain healthy. He had Sebastian Bulmer was out for a while, and the season you guys had, in spite of the fact, I thought was impressive, because that offensive line was pretty much held together with tape at one point.
Yeah, it was. And just not even that, just not only was the injuries a big problem, but they couldn't find quite the right position groupings as well. They were swapping guys in and out. They were centers playing guard and guards playing center and left tackles and right tackles switching around. And of all the positions in the NFL, you need the guys to be one cohesive unit. It's the offensive line. And we just couldn't get that this past year. There were 30 or 37, I believe, different combinations of guys on the offensive line. And we were able to compensate for that basically by using Julian Edelman and Deion Lewis to do a lot of quick release screens and in slants and in cuts and not allow defenses the time to get back there. But once Lewis went on IR and Edelman got hurt for an extended period of time, that was kind of it. They lost that facet of the offense, and it really started to go through and shine that they didn't have the personnel back there. But hopefully with Dante Scarnecchia back out of retirement, he was a huge boom for the Patriots. Cooper's going to be something. I'm not going to sit here and say he's going to be a godsend or anything like that, but I think the pieces are in place. Guys are coming back from injury. And with Scarnecchia, with Deion Lewis coming back, with the offense getting in full swing, there should be some good things going forward. And usually when the Patriots have a glaring weakness in one season, that immediately becomes a strength the following season. So look for that to happen in 2016.
We're all thinking it, though. Dolphins fans, that we expect Cooper to go there and just play his brains out. I mean, we just see that happen time and time again, where people go to the Patriots, you know, guys whose their career is pretty much DOA or never really got started in the first place, and they go there and then something clicks. It's like they buy into that culture and all of a sudden they're playing really well.
No, it's true. I think Belichick is really good at that. He knows there are more regular good players in the NFL than there are superstars, and he has system. and he has a system that works. And rather than go after these premier talents and force them into systems that maybe not right for them, he finds the guys that he knows can work in that system and plans accordingly. So I think the reason guys shine under the Patriots is because Belichick knows they get the most out of his talent. And if he makes some head-scratching moves and the guy turns on the Jets against the when he comes to the Patriots, it's not because he magically just got good. It's that he works the system. Belichick plays to his strengths, and he's very good at that. And I'm very grateful to have him as a coach.
I can only imagine. You guys are without
– Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, man.
It's that do-your-job culture. I mean, it's the same reason. I touched upon it in the scouting report I just wrote on Reggie Ragland, that for Alabama football players and New England football players, it's very similar because Belichick is Belichick, you know, taught Nick Saban so much and shaped
right.
who Nick Saban is as a coach so much. You don't see, I was watching because I wanted to, you know, I like to include gifs of the negatives from a player too, and I'm looking. I could count on one hand the instances during that entire season that they dropped Reggie Ragland into like one-on-one man coverage, no help, gave him a tight end. Why doesn't Nick Saban give a player a task like that? Because he knows he can't or isn't going to succeed at it. Same thing Belichick does. You know, you're not going to see these players going out of their comfort zones.
Right. And for sure. And it makes sense because you don't, even if a guy's a otherworldly talent, if he's playing out of position, he's not going to be as good as he would be if he was playing what he wanted to do. And I don't think Belichick has the ego where he wants to play my way or no way. He's a very adaptable coach, and I think that's why he's able to take these guys that are not superstars or world beaters and be contenders every year. Now, having Tom Brady really helps. I think Belichick gets maybe more credit than he deserves, that he basically found the greatest quarterback of all time in the sixth round. And having a guy like Brady, you can compensate for a lot on the offensive side of the ball, which allows you to load up on defense. But still, you got to give credit where credit is due. He's really done a great job with it, and people may not like his personality, but I personally love it. He's exactly the kind of guy I want as a coach, and I'm very lucky, and I'm trying to milk every last second out of the Brady Belichick area because the Patriots are going to be bad eventually. It's going to happen, and when that does happen, the world's going to rejoice, and I got to look back on the good old days.
Oh, don't tease us. So, one Duke, is there something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was talking about the Dolphins being, first of all, everyone always talks about the coaches. Well, I said, well, the Dolphins are built to beat the Patriots. That's true. They've done so three out of the past 4 years. They're just not built to beat the Bills and the Jets, and that's why they struggle against those teams. But against the Patriots, the three wins that they have, Ryan Tannehill is 65 for 107, which is a 61% completion percentage. That average was lowered a little bit by the 2014 game where he only completed 56% of his passes. The other two games he completed over 65%. But he's 65 for 107, 845 yards, 7 touchdowns, 1 interception, a passer rating of 103.5 with a yard per attempt average of 7.89. So needless to say, Tannehill likes playing the Patriots at home, and he's had considerable success against them at home.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I was definitely pulling for the Patriots in Super Bowl 36, you know, the first one against the Rams and everything. I mean, I remember that, and my dad is still a closet Patriots fan, just to point that out. I mean, he's a Bears fan and everything, but I know that he looks at Tom Brady as like his like a long-lost child or something. And a big reason for that is about halfway through that 2001 season. I remember they were playing the Saints, and we were watching that game, and he was like, you know what, this team's going to go to the Super Bowl. And because he called it and they won it, I think he feels like he was a part of it now. So, yeah, so I have to live with that at home, too. I know when we're sitting there watching games and he's back there, he won't say anything, but I know he's pulling for the Patriots, and it kind of sickens me. But you also got to tip your hat. You guys have – I mean, it's more than a business model at this point. I mean, you've done a lot – of things right in the past 15 years. So, no, I mean, we can sit there and make comments about it, but I mean, you guys are there for a reason. It's to the point, one of the questions I'll get to in a second is, I mean, it's always, when you're talking about the teams that are going to contend for the AFC, the Patriots are always the first team you think of.
Absolutely. Always. And it's the consistency. And I think that winning the Super Bowl is a combination of three things. You need talent, you need health, and you need luck. And two of those three things you can't really control, but the one you can control, the Patriots control very, very well, and they always put themselves in position to succeed to the point where almost we're so spoiled with Patriots fans. I think one of the reasons people dislike Patriots fans so intensely is the way that they behave when the Patriots lose in the AFC Championship game. They act like it was an abysmally failure of a season, and what a disaster, and Belichick's arrogance caught up to him. And so it's basically at the point now where it's either they win the Super Bowl every year or their season's a total failure. And that's just a crazy dynamic to have. And if you step back and look at it, it's kind of ridiculous to have that attitude. But that's just the culture he's built, where it's expected they're going to win the Super Bowl every year. They're going to be right in it. They're one of probably three or four teams in the AFC that are going to be right there at the end. And what can you do?
You don't have a first-round pick this year. So what are you guys looking at in terms of planning for the draft? Because, I mean, your focus is obviously on day two. I mean, are there any prospects that you really like for the Patriots right now? Is there anyone you're particularly interested in? Like, what is your mindset and your thought process right now?
Yeah, well, it's the Patriots, so they'll probably take a safety from a D3 school with their second round picks. That's kind of what they do. But if I had my druthers right now, my draft strategy's kind of shifted as the Patriots have made some moves along the offensive line, tight end position. I really like Xavien Howard out of Baylor, the cornerback. I think he's really solid. I think he'll be around pick 60 or so. The Patriots have, I think their starting cornerbacks are set with Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler, but not a lot of depth at cornerback right now. And if these guys go down, I'm not sure who's going to step up for them. So I like Xavien Howard a lot. I think he's a good guy. He's a good fit. Logan Ryan, Justin Coleman, Dale Roberts, those guys are all fine, but he's got the range. I think he had a 4.4 40, a 6.913 cone, something like that. He's really kind of a fast, quick twitch guy, so I really like as well. I also like offensive tackle Sean Coleman out of Auburn. Yeah, I think he's a good guy. He's 6'5", 310, 315, 2-year starter at left tackle. Nate Solder is going to be around for a little while, but I think he's a nice grooming prospect behind Nate Solder. Left tackle is an important position. So if I had my way, I would go Howard and Coleman. They're 60 and 61. But, of course, they'll probably package him and move up and move down, and I'm going to be way off of those picks.
I love the tackles in this draft. I think that the Dolphins and their fans, or I should say Dolphins fans, are probably overlooking this tackle class a little bit just because there's such an insane need on the defensive side of the football. But you've seen, like in 2013, it was supposed to be this great class. You had guys like, you know, Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel, these guys coming out, and it didn't really pan out that way. I think that this is the year where the talent in this draft is worthy of where those guys went in 2013. I like a lot of these guys. So go ahead.
No, I agree with that. I mean, it's funny. I don't think there are – this draft is weird in that there aren't really that many of like Andrew Luck, Adrian Peterson, just like star studded kind of like big names. Everyone knows who they are. They know where they're going, but it's a very deep draft. And a lot of the real skill comes at the unsexy picks, the unsexy positions. You know, everyone likes when they draft a running back or a quarterback or a receiver, but you can get some really good linebackers in this draft. There's good offensive linemen. There are good, maybe nose tackles in this draft. And so I think if you are a team with a lot of picks, which the Patriots are actually, they have a lot of picks, no first rounder, but they have 2 seconds, 2/3, a bunch of six. They're in good shape because you can get a lot of talent in the later rounds this year and really flesh out the back end of your roster.
There are a lot of talented fat guys in this draft, yeah. I would say. We'll go ahead and we did like a sort of quick hits thing with the last guest that we had. We'll do the same for you. I put together a list of questions, just, you know, rapid fire type stuff. I'll give you a short question. You can give me a short answer if you want to elaborate on it. It's your time. Feel free to do so.
All right.
Give me your over under on Tom Brady playing until he's 45.
Till he's 45. I'm going to take the over on that. I think he will play till he's 45. He might not play in New England until he's 45, but I think he just wants to keep playing and he takes good care of his body. So he'll pull like a Brett Favre, finish somewhere like San Francisco or Kansas City, something like that.
Now here's the thing. When I wrote that question, I looked at it and I was like, that looks really stupid. Nobody plays till they're 45. That guy might pull it off.
He might. He takes crazy good care of his body. He goes to bed at 8 every night. He doesn't eat anything besides like organic kale and stuff. And he's got no other hobbies. He doesn't, you know, do anything. Like, what's he going to do after he retires? So I can see
his hair. That's about it.
Yeah.
Someone's got to do it. that beautiful hair is not going to take care of itself. So, but yeah, I couldn't get around thinking that, you know, 45, that's insane. It's like you're making the guy out to be like George Blanda or something. But the thing is, he's probably going to get to that range unless he gets hurt early on, because he's going to be 39. Nine. He's going to be 40 next year. And right. I mean, there's no signs of him slowing down. I mean, he looks as good as ever. So,
yeah. And again, he's not the kind of quarterback who's very mobile. He never was. So as long as he has a good pocket and he can stand there and throw the short to mid-range passes, you can do that in your 40s if you're really careful. You can.
The whole thing is just insanity. Would the Pats have beaten Carolina in Super Bowl 50?
I think they would have. I think that the Panthers were very scared. They played a very sloppy game. I also think, honestly, the Patriots beat the Broncos at Gillette Stadium. But if you watch that game, the offensive line was such a mess that Brady had to telegraph a snap count. And Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware were in the backfield before the ball was even snapped sometimes because of the noise and whatnot. And so, sad to say, but you know what? You can't make excuses. Credit to the Broncos. I'm actually kind of glad to see Peyton Manning win one. It's nice to see him get out of there on top. You always want to see that.
Yeah. Your favorite Super Bowl victory of the four that you've notched, do you have a favorite one?
It's funny. I actually read an article on this when they won their last one, and it was really a toss-up between this last one and their first one, but nothing will ever top that first season. That's when, you know, the Mo Lewis hit, brought Brady in the wake of 9/11. No one had the Patriots going anywhere. The snowball, the tuck rule, that final field goal, nothing will ever top that win.
Drew Bledsoe beating Steelers. On and so
forth. Yeah, the narrative is just unreal. You can't script it.
Yeah, which I feel like when people always, they overlook the fact that, you know, that was a really good Steelers team that, I mean, Drew Bledsoe comes in and you know, puts that game away.
Yeah. And there's the big quarterback controversy in between Super Bowl week, who's going to start. It was awesome. The whole thing was amazing. And the Pats were 14-point underdogs. No one gave them a chance, and it was great.
Yeah. So, and this is a serious question. Bigger jackass, John Elway or Jim Irsay?
You know, at least Elway was a great quarterback and a Hall of Famer. Irsay is just he's got nothing going for him. He's got absolutely nothing going for him. He's like that guy at the club who's like 50 and alone in like a low-cut T-shirt scooping on like teenagers. He's got no business being anybody, and I would be happy to. But I love that he's still around, because as long as he's still there, the Colts will continue to make jackass decisions. So, Irsay, keep doing your thing, man.
I want to ban him from Twitter.
Not even Twitter. The aspirin comment was just so asinine.
Oh,
but
yeah.
First thing, I feel like if Ed Hardy was ever going out of business, that Jim Irsay would personally buy the company and fund it forever. But the other thing is, how's our old buddy Ben Volen doing up there?
Trolling Volen.
He's covering you. Yeah, he is. Yeah. I mean, like, he's not as bad as the guys that they have down in South Florida, but he's interesting. He's a guy.
I mean, I'll tell you, his articles get page views. I'll say that.
I mean, yeah, that's what gets you hired in
right.
this day and age, as evidenced by the people that the South Florida papers retain.
Right.
But he's a good reporter. He's a good reporter.
I guess. I'm not a fan of his, but I actually don't really pay attention to maybe 90% of the professional sports media. I get really good content by the fan for the fan stuff. Guys without an agenda, doing it because they enjoy it. It's way better than anything you get on ESPN, in my opinion.
I wish we could ignore 90% of the sports media down in South Florida.
Wait, you don't?
Why no,
don't?
I do. It appears whatever gets retweeted on my list.
I read. You know, if there's valuable news from a report, the only guy who doesn't tweet it out is Barry Jackson. You know, you really have to read Barry Jackson's articles, and he's great at what he does. And so I read Barry's cover to cover. But other than that, I mean, like, they had a guy, I forget his name, at the Sun Sentinel who argued for Derrick Henry with the 8th overall pick.
It's Chris Perkins.
Like, Chris Perkins. Oh, yeah, he is just absolutely clueless. And James Walker, who does ESPN, tweeted out today that Isaiah Pede was a 4th-round pick, as if he didn't remember him getting picked in the 2nd round. And, like, it's absolutely – and then there's Omar, who I got blocked by today. So I don't have to – I was following him out of obligation to the other fans because I really like tormenting him. But he stopped firing back.
What did you say to get blocked?
He said that he has wet dreams about Paxton Lynch getting drafted 13th overall by the Dolphins. And I said that Ryan Tannehill should tell him that he's only going to answer questions in his wet dreams anymore. But it's, I also like to make frequent work of the fact that his one source on the team is Nico Grimes, and that he doesn't like Adam Gase because he didn't have any scoop throughout the entire coaching search. You know, the Sun Sentinel published like two articles during that week. You know, Adam Beasley did a great job. Andrew Abramson did a great job. Armando Salguero, always pretty good. But, you know, Omar's too busy out at dinner with Brent and Miko. So it's an interesting dynamic down there. I mean, can you imagine a player under Bill Belichick having dinner with a beat reporter?
No, never gonna do that.
Yeah, right. So and, you know, there's a reason when the Dolphins wanted to tighten up the ship that they made it very clear that they cut Miko and Brent. It's not necessarily just what comes in, not necessarily just what comes in from Miko's mouth to the team, but what comes out of her mouth to reporters.
If you if you're not a fan of Trollin Volin, who are some of the Boston media guys you do? Like, I know that you don't pay attention to a lot of them. I figure Dan Shaughnessy probably isn't on your wish list here, but are there any guys out there where you're like, yeah, I like him?
Yeah, I like Mike Reese a lot for ESPN Boston. I rarely read ESPN, but he's really solid. I love Jerry Thornton at WEEI. He's kind of the he's like a comedian, but he's got a really good kind of like fan voice. And he remembers when they were really terrible, and he kind of comes out of it. I love Tommy Curran at Comcast Sportsnet. He's really good.
he's a fun guy. He's fun. Like, he's fun because he kind of takes on that like boisterous Patriots fan like attitude when he's like writing and dealing with people, and like it's pretty funny to watch him like interact with like other fan bases. It's really funny.
He's
taking
a good
on
guy.
The personality of his team.
Better chin, Tom Brady, or the actual Pats logo?
I mean, I'm a huge old-school Pat Patriot 1968 Phil Bissell logo. I'm not a huge fan of Flying Elvis, so that's Tom Brady all day.
Well, that kind of takes care of my next question. I was going to say, better logo, three-point stance, or floating head?
Yeah, three-point stance. I think the Patriots throwbacks in the red and white with the old-school logo is one of the most badass uniforms in the NFL. I may be biased, but I love that look.
No, I'll give you that. And the thing is, I don't think a lot of people get an opportunity to look at that logo up close. It is pretty badass. I will give you that.
Awesome. Yeah.
That was well done. And done at a time where, you know, teams weren't really putting out that kind of detail in their sports logo. So
props to Phil Bissell.
Do you miss the five layers of visa protection?
No.
Tom. We're figurative metaphors. So who is New England's biggest competition in the AFC next season? I mentioned that you guys are looked at as the big contender coming out of the conference. Who do you look at as your biggest competition?
In the AFC or the AFC East?
AFC, please. AFC East. Get out of here with that noise.
In the AFC, I'm probably going to go with Pittsburgh, even though Martavis Bryant is now gone for the year. They're getting their running back. They're getting their guys back. They're going to be pretty solid. Although I think Baltimore's making some good moves. They were terrible last year. It depends on Flacco and his injury, but probably Pittsburgh.
Yeah, oh no, look out for Mike Wallace. before we move on, say something nice. Actually, you know what? You already said something nice about the Dolphins. You completely caught me off guard with that because when you came in there, I was thinking like, what kind of conversation are we going to have? And it turned out to be pleasant. So,
well, let me ask you this though. A question I have for you as a Dolphins fan is: this is now, I don't know, maybe the fourth year in a row where the Dolphins have adopted a very aggressive free agency strategy. Spent a lot of money early, brought some quote unquote big names in, just signed Mario Williams, made some splashes. Are Dolphins fans happy with this approach, or are they kind of sick of it and wishing they'd maybe do something different?
Wasn't the approach this year,
other,
though.
Well,
that,
for
I mean,
any
the thing
other
is,
team,
is like it.
This was a. This was a big year for any other team. But for the Dolphins, if the contract doesn't have 100 before the rest of the zeros, it's not a big offseason. You know what I mean? Like, it's not – we didn't sign a guy to nine figures or whatever Stephen Ross decides to do now.
Right.
It was actually a pretty quiet offseason. And, you know, this is the least hype that I've seen from Dolphins fans in a while. I'm sure that'll change when, you know, they think whichever player we draft is an instant, you know, plug and play guy. But it's it's definitely, I almost feel like they're resigned to their fate, you know, after this offseason, kind of just saying, like, if, like, the team's only going to go as far as Ryan Tannehill takes them, and let's wait and see.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't,
that's fair.
I don't think they're really that big of spenders. I mean, Mario Williams at $8 million a year, when you think about people killing us for not re-signing Olivier Vernon when he got $17 million a year from
insane.
The New York Giants.
So
I think you're – yeah, and because it's been such a such a change from the spending in, you know, 2013, 14, and 15 to this year, where they're being more prudent with their money, they're saying they're not going after the positions of need just because there are names out there. I think that's kind of taken a lot of fans aback, and I think a lot of people, I think they were angry about it. I think they're coming around now, but it was ugly early on, because he had people who thought that the Dolphins weren't making a big enough pitch for guys like Alex Boone, Pac-Man Jones, which I was completely fine with.
Yeah.
When you had guys like Prince Amukamara out there, and then they turn into like, well, what about Patrick Robinson? And it just turned into this thing where people are like, well, are you going to go after these guys? And it's clear they're going to build through the draft, and that's going to be painful. You know, that's not something where you just sail through it while you're winning games and it's gravy. It's not a big deal. I mean, you're hoping the offense plays well. The defense is going to be bad, but you're hoping that things pick up sooner than later. I only have a couple of questions left. This is something I've wondered. This is a shower thought. If Bill Belichick is Emperor Palpatine and Tom Brady is Darth Vader, does that mean that Tom's kid with Bridget Moynihan is Luke Skywalker?
I've never seen Star Wars before, so I don't know if I can answer that question accurately. No, I've never seen Star Wars.
Well, that blew up in my face. Really?
I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. Like, it's like a secret shame. It's like I can keep up on a conversation because it's such a cultural icon and there are snippets and highlights, but I've actually never sat down and watched the movies all the way through. And I've never seen any, I haven't seen any of the new ones or anything, so I got nothing.
I think I'm having palpitations right now.
Understood. No, understood.
All right, so suppose the Patriots make it to Super Bowl 51. Who do you think who's their opponent?
Out of the NFC, I think Arizona actually is a Super Bowl contender right now. They're missing an edge rusher. They got one in Chandler Jones. They probably should have gone to the Super Bowl this past year, but the Carolina was just too strong. So I'm going to go with Patriots Cardinals.
So we'll call it the Chandler Cooper Bowl.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. All right. Does anyone else have any questions for Alec before we go ahead and fold it up for tonight?
I got one quick question.
All righty.
I wanted to ask the Jets guy this, but I didn't get a chance to. Is Ryan Tannehill is a very polarizing guy for Miami fans. And it's about to a point where you either love him or you hate him. How is he viewed outside of Dolphins fans? And what do the Patriots fans think of him? Do they think he's just a guy, he's decent, or they think he's a promising guy that's held back by something else? I mean, what is it that when you play against that guy, he comes up, what's Patriots fans' thoughts on him?
Yeah, I like Tannehill. I think he's got a good skill set. I think he's one of – there are certain players in the NFL that are not great, but like you said earlier, they bring their A game against New England, and they really shine against the Patriots. Tannehill's very good at home against New England. But I don't think you're going to Super Bowl him. I don't think he is a guy to take you all the way to a championship. And the problem with the way the league is structured and the way the league is changing and evolving, as they care more and more about ratings and making money than about actually producing a good product, there are only a small handful of quarterbacks that can win you a championship. And he's not one of those guys. He's better than most of the guys out there, and so you kind of have to ride with him. But, you know, I'm never scared of a Ryan Tannehill offense coming to town. I'll put it that way. But I like him. But I don't think he's going to be – he's not really the guy.
All right, telling it like it is. This is Alec Shane of SB Nation's Pat's Pulpit. Alec, where can people find you online and on Twitter?
Yeah, again, patspulpit.com is the website I write for, and you can find me on Twitter at Alec D. Shane.
All right, I really appreciate having you on. I don't know if you consider doing this again anytime soon.
Anytime.
Maybe like the night before the draft, I was thinking about putting a show together. And if you're willing to participate, I'd love to have you on.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks.
All right, great. Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys, take care.
All right, take care, Alec. So we'll go ahead and wrap up the show. One thing I want to point out that happened today, and it's not It's not off. It's far, far from it. The Finsider was the official Miami Dolphins sort of studio analyst team, if you will. They did their last show today. And I haven't really been able to wrap my head around the fact that the organization has decided to move on from these guys. But that was a really team that they had in that studio analyst. I mean, I was listening to when they'd have O.J. Murphy on, Sam Madison, John Kojemi was excellent on the show. Greg Likens did a really good job replacing Jesse Agler, who was also very good on that show and is now with the Padres organization. So I just say it's a dark day for good, we'll say, good team journalism. I thought that was a great product. I loved listening to their show whenever I could. It's not the fact that it's not there anymore makes me sad. So
I thought it was never about the analysis because I mean, you know, none of us because they work for the team. So it wasn't, you know, they weren't going diving deep into the X's and O's. And if Dolphins fans want that, the Miami pod that Ian Wharton and Oscar Hazel do is unbelievable work. And they don't pay for advertising. You can find them on Twitter at Miami Pod. Yeah, I have nothing to do with them. I've never been on as a guest there, but they do an outstanding job. And you know, the real difference on the Finsiders show with the F, the original Finsider, is
actually we're the official. We are the original Finsider. They started.
We are the original. Wow, I work for you guys, and I didn't even know that. Yeah. Then. You know, the players were so comfortable there because, you know, they knew it was really good personal insight into who the guys on the team are as people. You know, it wasn't like they weren't saying like, hey, Ryan Tannehill, how did you deal with Meiko Grimes calling you out publicly? Because they weren't going to ask questions like that. But they asked questions like, hey, like, what were your thoughts when you got drafted by the Miami Dolphins? Like, what do you like to do in your time off? And you, like, learn something about these players in terms of who they are off the field. And you ask any of them, and they all really felt comfortable interacting with Greg Likens, who's the host over there. And I think, you know, Tom Garfinkel, the team's kind of public relations guru, announced today that they're going to be announcing a new format for fans to get that in-depth look into the team in the coming weeks. It was a legal thing that ended up, I think, leading to the downfall of the Finsiders, but it's definitely going to be missed just in terms of being able to have Dolphins talk because the national media doesn't cover them enough. Not because I don't think the national media is biased against the Dolphins. I just think they're biased against bad teams that don't get good ratings for them. And then, you know, locally, especially at this time of year, it's all about the heat because they're competitive. And so it's tough to find good Dolphins talk, and it was always great to be able to turn them on and hear, like, what they had to say about the team.
Yeah.
So, it was Dolphins talk from the pros. I mean, it wasn't – we have fan sites, and we have, you know, podcasts like this where we talk Dolphins stuff, and I think it's very insightful. You know, listening to these other podcasts and coming on this one and stuff, but that's what it was. It was for the fans, but it was by the team. It's what they put out there, and you know, it's going to leave that void. They're really not going to be filled until the team does something about it because South Florida media is so bad. And it's going to have to come from the fan side. You know, the real insiders, us. And other fan sites and what drives this stuff because that's what people want to hear. They don't want to read garbage from the papers because that's pretty much what it is. They want to hear good analysis. They want to hear talk. They want to hear people get on something and say, hey, the Dolphins are going to be good this year to get them excited, whether they believe it or not. They just want to hear it. And that's what you got from that show. Was, you know, you never heard them put down a player or anything else like that. It was always just a focus on the positive. Let's look at everything and be bright and shiny and unicorns and rainbows and stuff. And, you know, it was fun.
It was a good way for fans to get involved. So I'm going to miss that part. I'll be interested to see what they introduce as the replacement program. But they were all good guys. I loved submitting answers to their online, you know, Twitter questions, and then if they did answer your questions, they tweet you back. So I always thought that was pretty cool. It was just a nice way to kind of stay in touch with parts of the team and just being able to interact with them in a different way. So that'll do it for us for tonight. We're sorry that we weren't able to bring Lewis on for the small amount of time that he was available. I'm going to wrap this up, though. So for my co-hosts, Duke and Max, we want to thank Kyle Smith, who called in with he's with AFC East Bros, and Alex Shane from Pat's Pulpit. Both guys were great. We're excited to have him on again soon. So from everyone here with the Finsider and Finsider Radio, good night. We'll talk to you next week.